Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Waking Up the Workplace interview series. The purpose of the series is to explore the cutting edge of conscious business, and that's exactly what we aim to do today. On the call, we have my good friends and colleagues, Ewan, working technology on the back, and there's Jeroen here with me today. Hi,
Hello.
Ewan.
Hello, everybody.
And also here today, of course, is Brian Johnson, who will be our first speaker in a lineup of about 15 speakers that will be running weekly all the way up until June. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Thrilled to be here.
Very good to have you. I just want to check in with you guys quickly before we move on into our conversation. Jeroen, how are you doing today?
I'm actually very excited. I was just talking with Ewan about how more than a year ago we started with the idea of, talking about what really is conscious business, or, the waking up the workplace. Can you have your personal development, become more aware, become more awake while being at work? And from that conversation, we had so much more questions coming up that we just felt like diving into a deeper inquiry, and then, why not just ask 15 of the most inspiring people and ask them what they are doing? And I can't really believe that we're actually doing that right now. So I'm really excited. I'm hoping everything works well as well with the technology and the sounds. But I'm ready for it.
Cool. So Brian, let's hear from you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great as well. I share that excitement. I really appreciate you guys putting this together and inviting me to have a fun chat with you. So I'm really looking forward to what we can explore.
Cool. Well, just to tune in myself, I'm also doing really well. Like Jeroen, pretty excited. We're here in a beautiful estate, I guess you would say, which is in a place close to Amsterdam, the Netherlands. And the three of us are here in a room in a beautiful old building. There's actually a Buddha sitting right in between Jeroen and myself, stone Buddha, who's kind of helping us host this conversation. And when we look out the window, obviously it's dark because it's 8 o'clock in the evening here, unlike for you, Brian. If we would see anything, we would see a beautiful estate, and there's actually even deer walking around here. We were just outside taking a breath of fresh air, and there were deer walking on the grass, so it's just a beautiful place to be hosting this call from. And I'm a little bit excited because it's our first call, and I want everything to go just right. But then, the most important thing for me is that we just have a completely lively conversation about what we're really passionate about. So, let's just do that. And, I just told you a little bit about where we are. I think it'd be nice to hear a little bit about where you are, Brian, so we can just picture that. Of course, I think it's noon for you, is it?
It's noon here. I'm in Los Angeles. I'm actually in West Hollywood right now, in the middle of Los Angeles, and really feeling the energy of kind of the vitality of a busy city, and excited to kind of be checking into this call and bringing that. As you know, I've been traveling quite a bit, spent some time in Bali and in Ecuador, and really feeling into where my wife and I want to settle down, and we're now experimenting with the energy of LA and having fun with that.
Cool. So let's see how that energy will work today as we go into this conversation. We have about 90 minutes. For the first part, just about an hour, we'll have a kind of three-way conversation between yourself, Brian, and Jeroen and me. And Ewan in the background will probably do a little bit of tweeting when we hit on some sweet spots in our conversation. So for those of you listening, you can check that out at twitter.com/wakingworkplace. And, of course, the other place that you can go if you want a little bit more info on either us or the series or Brian, of course, you can go to our website at www.wakingupthworkplace.com. And you'll also find a blog there, just add /blog to the URL. I think most of you have seen it by now because there's been quite a bit of conversation going on there. And if you want, throughout the call, you can also just add your questions and comments there. Towards the end of the call, we'll have around 20 to 30 minutes for Q&A. So people calling in today through phone will get a chance to ask their question to Brian live on the phone. But if you're listening in through the Internet, you, of course, also have a chance to submit a question. if you're looking at the instant teleseminar window, then in your lower left there should be a box where you can add your name and question. And in the second part of the call, we'll ask as many of those questions as we can to Brian.
And maybe it's good to mention that even in the preparation of our interview, we're really looking at the questions that people have posted. So today we've really tried to work through a lot of those questions and try to integrate them in the things that we're going to talk about, Brian.
Sounds good.
So why don't we dive in? And as a first kind of opening question and a way of also getting to know you a little better, Brian, of course, this series is all about conscious business, waking up the workplace. So we thought maybe a nice place to start would be, actually, what is work to you? And in the spirit of inquiry, I think we're just going to have kind of like a three-way conversation. So it's a bit of an interview, but then really I want it to be more of a conversation. So, we can reflect on the spot, and if we have a bit of silence, that's perfectly fine with me and hopefully with our listeners as well. So just let's really kind of feel into it and just have a great conversation. So, what is work to you, Brian?
What is work? That's a great question. So work for me is a blend of service and of really giving one of the phrases that I really like is giving my greatest gifts in greatest service to the world. So finding a way that I can use my strengths in service to the world. That's really how I have structured my life as an inquiry into how can I most fully do that? And then how can I do that in the construct of conscious capitalism and conscious business as an entrepreneur and as a passionate student of life and a lover of wisdom, call myself a philosopher based on that idea of loving wisdom and kind of integrating my passions for self-development with my passions for creating conscious businesses and finding a way to give my gifts to the world and hopefully inspire and empower other people to do the same.
Really remember from looking at what you have been doing, Brian, is that you once wrote this piece, Arete and the Entrepreneur, and I remember it really touched me. I think that Arete meant something like your self-actualizing, reaching your highest potential, and doing that through entrepreneurship. And I was wondering if you could comment a bit on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciated you guys bringing that essay and article up, Arete and the Entrepreneur. And I was asked to just give you context for where that essay came from. Michael Strong and Jeff Klein, who's participating in this great series, and John Mackey have an organization called, at the time it was called Flow, and now they call it Conscious Capitalism. And we were teaching a class on entrepreneurialism, and I was asked to discuss the role of the conscious entrepreneur. And it's really a big passion of mine is how do we as individuals show up most fully, which I think is the heart of conscious business and waking up the workplace, is showing up most consciously as both, entrepreneurs, employees, and other people creating products and services, and as consumers. And the art and the entrepreneur piece was really kind of a little mini manifesto on that, which is the heart of my work now, which is bringing virtue, this classic Greek ideal of arete, which directly translates as excellence or virtue, but it has a deeper meaning, something closer to striving to live at your highest potential, being your best moment to moment to moment. And for the Greeks, this was the highest virtue. It was kind of the meta virtue that encompassed all the other virtues. And it's really, I think, the heart of this conversation is, can each of us live with more and more virtue, more and more excellence, more and more arete, where we're consciously and deliberately evolving and striving to live our ideals, live with more integrity, and to show up in as our highest selves. And that essay was a place where I shared that basic idea and then some of the big ideas that I think we can embrace as entrepreneurs and as just normal human beings, consumers, employees, et cetera, to live a more fully awakened life.
Now, so in your journey as an entrepreneur, could you tell us about maybe one of the most powerful experiences that you personally had with being an entrepreneur? An example that you know, kind of goes to the heart of what you're talking about, virtue, excellence, arete, and being an entrepreneur.
Yeah. Well, the basic idea is I've had different conversations with different mentors of mine, just realizing that my own consciousness is our business's, my business's greatest asset. And really, really realizing that, that, you know, we can talk about what we're producing and the websites and the programs and the products and all of these things, but ultimately our consciousness is our greatest asset. And that idea and realizing that is probably one of the strongest epiphanies and realizations I've had in my entrepreneurial career. And then realizing that the practices that I engage in my day-to-day life are really what's going to make the business succeed or not. And, of course, determine whether I'm having fun while I'm doing it. So things that may not seem like cornerstones of business have become so for me and for our small business of really focusing on our meditation practice, if that's something that's important to us, our nutrition, our exercise, and the appointments we keep with ourselves to develop our fundamentals and rituals, and seeing that those are just as important as any other meeting we're going to put into our schedule, and really honoring the idea that, again, our consciousness is our greatest asset, and we need to invest in that diligently, patiently, persistently throughout our day-to-day lives. So that's kind of an intangible thing, but one of the greatest realizations that I've had over the last, I don't know what it's been, maybe decade since I've been playing around at this.
Yeah, that sounds like a really intriguing thing. Like, I've never really thought about that, like consciousness being your greatest asset as an entrepreneur. Like, what does that even mean? Could you unpack that a little bit more for us? Because
yeah. So, for example, when I started my first business as a 24-year-old law school dropout, started a company focused on families and sports. It's like Little League baseball teams, AYSO, and public soccer teams, and basically all the amateur sports teams out there. I had a vision that in a matter of time, they'd all be using the web for everything. This is in 1998. And, you know, schedules and standings and pictures grandma and grandpa could check out, kind of like a mini ESPN for families involved in sports. And we won a business plan competition, raised some money, and did all that stuff and grew quickly. But I didn't have solid habits, and I found myself, I didn't work out very consistently, I didn't eat well at all, and I hadn't really trained my mind to be able to put my attention where I wanted to put it, when I wanted to put it. And there were lots of ups and downs through my own kind of leadership of that business and through our business in general. And I didn't have the tools to really show up as powerfully as I could in the midst of those challenges. So for me, if I want to be an effective leader, an effective entrepreneur, it's imperative. Like, I haven't missed a day of meditation now in I don't even know how long, quite a while. And I can't imagine missing a day. I know that my mind is so much more stable when I'm consistently showing up. You couldn't pay me to not exercise. I know that I'm way less stable when I'm not exercising. And all the other practices that I've put into place, I can see how powerfully they're transformed into nuts and bolts business effectiveness. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And I'm kind of wondering, since you're using the language, like, in a way, it's like you're saying consciousness is your greatest asset, and that means also taking it very seriously and investing in it. So could you tell us a little bit more about, you know, what's the return on investment the asset of consciousness?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and also, like, what are ways to invest in our consciousness, right? And my intuition is to kind of start there, which is the things that we know are important to us. And this gets back to the arete concept. So virtue, excellence, et cetera. For me, it really is about living in integrity with our highest ideals. And we're either stepping forward into that integrity or we're stepping back into kind of a less fulfilled self. And I think we really need to take the inventory of our own habits and practices in our lives and see what enhances our lives, what really is an investment, and what's detracting from our overall performance, and identifying those things. And I mentioned a few of mine: meditation, exercise, nutrition, appreciating my wife, and a number of other things. And I think we need to identify that, and then I don't know how to really measure it in a quantifiable way. I can speak to it experientially and just say that literally you couldn't pay me to not do those things. And I think this also speaks to the fact that our work in our lives, to me, they're not really separate things. I don't really view my work as something that I go to and do separate from who I am. Who I am is a human being who's passionate about understanding how to live properly and being the type of human being I want to be in relationship to my wife and to our friends and community and to the people that we serve and everyone else we interact with, and hopefully inspiring other people to do the same. And that just happens to be how I express myself in my work, and that all serves one another. So I think that there's a certain integration that occurs as we really see ourselves at the center of that point. And then it's not just about how do we show up most powerfully at work. It's about how do we show up most powerfully in our relationships at work and at home, et cetera, et cetera.
It's you know, somebody asked on the blog, some woman named Sue, like, how does the wakeful workplace impact the bottom line? And what I really hear you saying is that you've just reframed your idea of what the bottom line is, you know, of your life. It's, you know, not just about looking at businesses and what their business bottom line is, but like multiple bottom lines about you know, your life. And I think that's a very beautiful description.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because even that is rarely discussed from the different bottom line models. It's rarely discussed that the actual individual, you know, an employee will be put into a stakeholder model as important along with the other ingredients. I just love the firms of endearment spice model, you know. But that idea of each of us as individuals and measuring our own happiness, that's the ultimate currency, and really identifying that as the ultimate currency, not only in what we're getting out of our work is happiness, but what we're hopefully giving through our work. Mm. When we talk about waking up the workplace and waking up the world and conscious business and conscious capitalism, for me, it's both sides of the equation. What are we doing that's really enabling us to show up most fully, that brings happiness into our lives and our families? And are we creating products and services that really light up the world, or are we creating things and selling things that don't? And I think a shift in conscious capitalism and conscious business and waking up the workplace requires that we really look into those things, you know, and again, get an integrity with that.
And, you know, it's like, but you know, it's also from my experience that the feeling of really wanting to make a difference in the world really, really led us to, you know, to start our own venture. And we were talking about it today that entrepreneurship is really, for example, in the Netherlands, a lot more people, specifically, you know, from a younger generation, are going into entrepreneurship, building up ventures, and it feels like it's, you know, it's exactly this inner tension of wanting to do good, but also wanting to make a living out of that. You know, mm-hmm. have your idealism, but also be able to practice that out in a way that actually manifests in the world. I think that's something we see in the Netherlands you know, a lot more. And I was wondering, is that something, you know, that you, from your travels, of the conversation that you have, is that something that you feel is a broader development right now?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that, you know, a lot of my work, nearly all of my work right now, is on studying from a philosophical perspective and a positive psychology perspective and just general self-development perspective, how do we live a happy life, a fulfilled, meaningful life? And one of the key aspects, unquestionably, is the idea of making a difference. As you said, it's contributing to our community. And one of my big ideas that I'm focused on right now is the difference between extrinsic and intrinsic motivation and goals. And a guy named Edward Deci wrote a great book called Why We Do What We Do. And he looks at why we do what we do, and there's something that he calls extrinsic motivators, which most of us have heard in different ways. I didn't really understand it before I studied his work. And he says that extrinsic motivators are things like seeking fame, wealth, and beauty. Those would be extrinsic variables. And which is pretty much what our society is based on. How can I go out and get as powerful as I can and as famous as I can, make as much money as I can, and look as hot as I can in the process, right? Extrinsic variables, extrinsic motivators. Then he talks about intrinsic motivators. And intrinsic motivators are things like having great relationships and growing as an individual and creating contributions to your community, right? So relatedness, growth, and contribution. And to me, this is the heart of our conversation is, we are happiest when we are following our intrinsic motivators of relating, growing as human beings, and making a contribution. Yet our society is structured to go after the extrinsic variables, but we know scientifically that we're going to be less psychologically stable if we're seeking those extrinsic things. Even if we think we're going to get them, we're going to be less psychologically stable. We're going to have more anxiety, more depression, more angst than we will if we slow down and focus on deepening our relationships, growing as a human being, and making a difference. And for me, that's the heart of this, is let's quit pursuing all those external measures of success and kind of, you know, don't even think about anything that might get in our way and forget our family and all our health and actually making a real difference in the community, right? And getting back into that mode is, I think, what it's all about. And I'm definitely seeing that awakening more and more in my life and the, you know, lives of the people we interact with and, you know, in these conversations and a lot of the conversations I have with other friends and mentors. So an affirmative yes.
Nice. Yeah, I'm wondering, Brian, because you're talking about extrinsic motivators, and I think, like you said, that's something that you know, basically our kind of society and definitely our businesses are structured upon, like they're built around those ideas. You know, you get the bonus, you get the car, you get the phone, etc. What I'm seeing here in the Netherlands, like Jeroen was just saying, is more and more people are going into entrepreneurship. Like the numbers keep rising in the past few years, and really a pretty big percentage of the population, the working population now, is self-employed. I'm not sure about the exact percentage, but relatively speaking, I think it's big. And I'm wondering, like on the one hand, people seem to be stepping out of existing workplaces, you know, big companies, small companies, because they want to be their own boss, and they also want to be able to make a difference and live their own values. And the only way that they can really see that they can do that often is by being self-employed. But then, you know, that makes me wonder, like on a larger time scale, you know, do you feel that being an entrepreneur is necessarily at odds with, you know, being in the more traditional workplace? And for the future, like, do you see there ways that they could kind of marry and be integrated? Like, are they necessarily at odds? Because that would be a bit of a scary thought.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I'm the one to ask that question to, because I threw up on my way home from work my first week of working at the largest professional services firm in the world, Arthur Andersen at the time, in the late 90s. You know, I've never quite fit into the corporate model, and I've always had a desire to really create something that I really, really felt good about, you know, and I just couldn't go through the motions of moving up the corporate ladder and kind of doing these things and those things and kind of grinding away at things that I didn't really feel passionate about. And much of my life has been an exploration of, but what am I really here to do? And I firmly believe we each have a unique constellation of experiences and gifts and the ability to give them in dynamic ways. And for a lot of us, it's going to be in the context of a business that we either create or work within. And for many of us, it's going to be as kind of, we can do that in the employee context, in the bigger business context, and for a lot of us, it's going to be in the self-employed context. And I think that's very much a personal pursuit, and I'm not sure from an abstract perspective what that looks like, but I think each of us needs to check in and see, well, what's right for me, and how do I show up most fully in whatever context I'm in? If I'm an employee in a big firm, well, then let's not complain and criticize. Let's figure out how we can show up most powerfully in that context and either shift it or, you know, just bring our higher selves in that domain or create something that we feel more inspired about.
Exactly.
I don't think I answered your question there.
No, well, you know, it's an interesting topic to look at. Like, for example, I'm always very driven by the question, where can I have most impact in a positive sense in the world? And from the different options to choose from, you know, when you're leaving university, for example, that was for me the question, do I want to work in a big corporation? And it has its benefits. And, you know, and I hear you say there's like, you know, some of the extrinsic motivators. But for me, it's also a bit the power that these organizations have, you know, like some of the biggest corporations of the world, they have offices in more than 100 countries. They have more income on a yearly basis than some actual nation states, which means so my naive thinking in the beginning was like, hey, if I would go into one of these companies, I could change them from the inside out, and that could actually have so much impact on so many different levels. But you know, then I'm also noticing that by actually trying to work in that way, I'm also noticing there are so many forces in these bigger organizations that make, you know, that make doing changes a lot harder. And you know, and so now I've moved more into being an entrepreneur, and from that way having a lot more freedom to really live my own values and passions. But it's still a question, you know, if we really want to make a difference, should we just start it ourselves, or you know, do that in a venture, or work into organizations? And, you know, it's still an ongoing question.
Well, I think the thing that is consistent among whichever path we take, because, again, for many of us it's going to be within a large corporate structure, and that's awesome. I love the way you painted that, and I firmly believe that, I mean, there's so many great businesses doing great things and so many other businesses that are evolving toward doing more and more healthful, great things, and to be a part of that is awesome. And, again, there's the entrepreneurial path as well, which has its own challenges. But I think what's consistent among both of those paths and all of the myriad of variety of paths within them is this idea of how are we showing up in those contexts? Are we doing whatever it is we say is important, our meditation or nutrition or exercise, et cetera, or not? And I think that's ultimately, especially as we navigate the question of, gosh, how do I most powerfully show up? For me, when I'm in the depths of those inquiry, which is not always fun, and usually it's very unfun, it's most important that I'm engaged in my practices such that I can show up most powerfully. So I just want to keep on stressing that idea of, and even as you guys go through this next, you know, 14, 15 weeks, it's really exciting to imagine, like, how do we start this process individually and continue to deepen our practices such that as we understand more of the intellectual concepts and how we work within different team environments or build our own businesses, et cetera, that we can, you know, be our highest selves.
Mm. And, you know, as I know from, you know, your work with philosophers know that, you know, I have this image of you, you know, churning through book after book of, like, ancient traditions and wisdom. And I'm just wondering, you know, if this thing we're talking about right now, you know, taking the more, you know, the personal path or your personal practice to help you show up in work, is this something that, you know, you also find in the, you know, in these wisdom traditions?
Absolutely. I mean, that is the essence of the wisdom traditions, is work on yourself, and you can only give what you possess. So if you don't have a strong consciousness, how are you going to give anything of value? And there's actually like more risk in angry people going out trying to make a difference in the world and just kind of creating more toxicity. Like, how do we actually become healthy, functioning, integrated human beings and offer that to the world? And that's the essence of so much of what I read from, again, the classic philosophers to this morning I'm studying nutrition, you know, and prevents and reverse heart disease by Caldwell Esselstyn, and this idea that, you know, we can change our lives and literally change the world through our nutrition, our dietary habits. That's huge. It's unbelievably significant yet overlooked. So I think each of these components is echoed throughout these different traditions, and it comes down to the mundane. We can talk intellectually about all this stuff, and Diedrich and I talked about this the other day. And we can have the theoretical conversations, but ultimately it comes down to the practice. Are we actually living what we know to be true? And we don't need to learn one more new thing. We just need to more consistently integrate the stuff we already know. That in itself wakes up the workplace. That in itself changes the world, from my perspective.
That's awesome, Brian. I was just wondering as I was listening, you know, changing the world, using the workplace as a vehicle for doing that, for changing the world and showing up fully as we are. Like, what do you think with some of the challenges of the 21st century? And, you know, I'm not even going to mention any because I know that we are all imaginative enough to think of at least 10. Like, if you think of those challenges, what kind of workplace do we need to really start addressing those?
Yeah, that is it's why you're having this series. We can explore these questions. That's a big question. And I'll start with because I'm studying nutrition currently, and I have a book in front of me right now. I mean, even just nutrition. You look at the obesity epidemic, you look at the amount of money that's spent in Western countries to deal with things like heart disease, cancer, diabetes, et cetera. These things are nearly completely preventable. And yet there's this structure set up that's completely reactive, that's completely unconscious, that is operating in significant ways, from remarkable loss of productivity in the workplace from sickness and illness and all those things to remarkable costs for insurance and dealing with all the diseases that could be prevented. So that's the first thing that comes to my mind is, wow, that'd be amazing if we can simply shift what we're consuming in terms of our nutrition and diet and overall lifestyle choices. That in itself can radically change the world. So I'll leave it at that and let you guys throw in some other ideas around that.
Well, I'm kind of wondering, like, you're, of course, out on your own, you know, sort of living the dream and doing the great work that you are. And I'm wondering if there might be a workplace, you know, let's just say an imaginative workplace that you would consider working within. And if so, you know, like, what would that workplace have to offer, you know, to really, because I'm still thinking about that question of entrepreneurship, at, you know, often seeming to be at odds with being in the workplace, but then I feel that that's not right, you know, that can't be right in a way, because the power of entrepreneurship, if you take that away, then the workplace is just an empty vessel, you know, it's hollow. So what's the kind of workplace that you would consider working for or in?
Yeah, well, who comes to mind for me is a friend and mentor of mine, John Mackey, who started and runs Whole Foods. And he's been one of my deepest inspirations. Actually, I'll take out the qualifier. He has been the deepest inspiration for me on conscious business, conscious capitalism, and just as a human being, you know, who's committed to living his values and making a huge difference in the world. So Whole Foods, you know, with their stakeholder model and their commitment to literally changing the world, is deeply inspiring for me. And, you know, I don't spend much time thinking about working other organizations, but that's an organization that's really inspiring. And I could imagine doing some great work within an organization like that, that is so committed to each of its stakeholders, from, you know, the whole idea of John's stakeholder model I just love, and I forget the name of the author of Firms of Endearment, but, you know, I love the acronym they throw it into, SPICE. Right, where they're looking at it and saying it's not just about the bottom line of how much money we can make. It's not about our investors running this business. It's about looking at all the stakeholders, and they put it into the acronym SPICE, right, where S-P-I-C-E, the five main stakeholders that they're serving, and the first one being society. So they're committed to making a difference in the world. They're not going to sell stuff that's going to create a toxic world. One of their major stakeholders is society. That deeply inspires me. Next stakeholder being partners, right? They're not going to try to squeeze them out of business and get the most they can from them. They want to see their partners thrive. That's awesome. Investors are obviously important. They're investing the capital and taking the risk to get the business going and need to see a great return. That's a given. Awesome. Let's honor that stakeholder group. And then the customers. The customers need to be served in positive ways. And again, are we creating helpful products? Or are we creating products that are going to lead to results and outcomes we don't want to see in our customers? What's on to the customers? And then the employees, of course. So I love the fact that they're so committed to honoring each of those stakeholders. And if I needed to pick a business right now that I was going to go work with other than my own, I'd be on the top of the list for sure.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like I'm just wondering, like, what is it about this company? Because, of course, you know, in a way you're using it also as an example, and I'm trying to listen for the patterns around that. What is it about Whole Foods that, you know, is so inspiring? Like, is it a set of values? I mean, I'm also wondering, like, what is what you were just telling us about SPICE, what is that? Is it a vision? Is it a value? Is it, like, how do you define that even? Because, you know, I'm also looking for what is a conscious business, and I think you're bringing in a key piece here. So what is it about Whole Foods that you're being attracted by?
The underlying thing, we can throw in, you know, places like Patagonia is another business that I really admire. What I see when I think of these businesses is purpose. They have a purpose. It's way beyond the bottom line. And I know you're going to have Tammy Simon in your series, and Tammy and John use a metaphor that I just love. they say that, of course, a business needs profits to run, just like your body needs red blood cells to function. But you don't live for your red blood cells, and a business shouldn't live for its profits. You need it to live, but you don't live for it. You know, there's a bigger purpose. There's something that's actually motivating a Whole Foods or a Patagonia or a Sounds True or any of these other great businesses out there. And to me, that's essential. There's meaning. There's a commitment to doing more than just making money. You know, and that's a rather limited perspective. So to me, that's one of the key elements is purpose. And then there's integrity. There's a set of values, as you mentioned, that these businesses have articulated. And for Whole Foods, among many of their values, it's a commitment to their various stakeholders. Patagonia has it as well. Sounds True. These other great businesses do this. And then they have integrity with those values in pursuit of their purpose. To me, that's arte. You know, that's virtuous. And that's inspiring. And people want to do business with those businesses, which is the other facet of conscious business that I think is one of the reasons why I'm so optimistic and so excited about it is, as John says, good business is good for business. You know, I mean, doing the right thing is ultimately good for business, especially now as people are just so jaded with what's gone on over the last decade that there's a huge opportunity for individuals and businesses to really step in and live with integrity and authenticity and purpose and deliver value in a meaningful way. So that's some of the ways that I would flesh it out. How about you guys?
Well, you know, what I'm really interested in as well is the idea that you're talking about being able to show up to your highest potential while being at work. Because very often I talk with friends of mine, and you know, we have our own personal practice. You know, like you were talking about your meditation, or the nutrition. But this often takes place outside of the workplace. You know, it's what you do in the morning or in the evening or in your weekends. And one of the ideas that I really had about that was, would it be possible to, as an organization, really facilitate a cultural surrounding? And I think there's some beautiful examples you gave about, you know, the values and the purpose that you can set as an organization. But could you also create some kind of structures in which people are more easily able to manifest their higher self, you know, to be able to really live their potential, or not only living it, but actually to be, you know, grow and learn and become more awake while actually going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And because you were asking, so what are some ideas of me about it? And I'm just really trying to pinpoint, you know, what are the examples in that, or you know, how are organizations maybe doing that? And I think one of the most beautiful parts that you're bringing in is that really this personal approach towards making a change, to first try to work on waking up yourself and
yep.
to be able to, from there, have an impact on the people around you or on the work that you're doing. And so that was something that I was wondering if you could maybe say a bit more about that.
Yep.
And then, basically, what works?
Yeah. Well, I think that what you're hitting on is, again, the core and cornerstone of good business. And Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi comes to mind, one of the leading positive psychologists who wrote a book called Good Business and talks about the fact that you can see who's creating culture by who has the tallest buildings. It's a great little story, then I'll come to the suggestions that he has. You know, in the classic times, you had the religious institutions had the tallest building in town. They created culture. Then come in the capitals and the castles. They're tallest buildings, they're creating the culture. Now it's the corporate headquarters, the skyscrapers. Businesses are creating culture. And his question is, do we have good businesses? And what he says is, we all have an innate drive to actualize, to fully express our gifts in greater service to the world, in our community, our families, et cetera. That's just an innate human need. A good business recognizes that human need and honors it. And it honors it all the way across the board from, the individuals who are leading the organization and creating the organization realize their consciousness is the greatest asset, and so are their team members. And their team members aren't treated as cogs in a wheel, but as individuals who also have unique drives to self-actualize. So the context in which they come to work and the environment in which they work is geared toward helping them fully give their gifts to the world. And then the products that they're creating are geared in the same way, where they're all about helping people fully actualize. And if you imagine a world where that's the dominant theme, that the business doesn't exist unless the products it's creating are enabling individuals to most fully express themselves in the most happy, fulfilled, meaningful, contributing way, the employees in that company are treated as, you know, an integral part of the whole process and are also honored in their actualization process. And, of course, the team members and the partners, the investors, et cetera, that's just extraordinarily inspiring for me. So that's kind of still abstract, but I think that's the heart of good business is how do we create those environments, right?
Yeah, and I think what I hear you saying as well, there is such an important place for leadership in this.
Mm-hmm. And anyone who's on the call who's investing in this, I mean, that's it. And it's another friend and favorite author of mine, Robin Sharma. His new book is Lead Without a Title. Lead Without a Title, The Leader Who Had No Title is the name of the book. And the concept of leading without a title, you don't need a title, whether it's CEO or VP of this or entrepreneur or whatever it is. We all have an opportunity to lead every moment of our lives and to take that responsibility. And again, as we do that, there's this amazing ripple effect that occurs that's impossible to overestimate.
So you were saying, like, Brian, you were talking about actualization and, you know, creating businesses that are completely geared towards that, both for the people working within them, but also, you know, the business doing that for the world. What happens? I'm also wondering, what happens when there is a gap between who I am and what I do? You know, because that means that apparently I can't self-actualize, or at least I can't do it in what I do. I can't do it in the workplace. I can't do it from 9 to 5. You know, I can be myself, but not when I go to work. Like, what happens, you know, to someone who's in that situation?
Yeah, well, I can speak from my personal experience on it, which is angst. You know, there's a level of discontentment, which I actually think is very healthy, because there's a gap between what we're capable of doing and what we're actually doing. And when we can step outside of the pain and quit numbing ourselves with more TV or more wine or whatever it is we do to kind of avoid the challenges, and we step back and we look at it and say, wow, these things are really important to me. It's really important to me that I show up fully in my family, that I feel healthy and alive, that I feel like my work is making a difference in the world, that I feel good about going to. And we actually look at that and say, but a lot of those things aren't happening. There's a gap, an integrity gap between our ideals and our current reality. Then it's a matter of holding that tension between the two, being honest about where we're at and committing to where we want to be and taking the baby steps so we can get in line. And it doesn't necessarily mean quitting your job tomorrow or anything as dramatic as that. Well, for some people it might. But it means, to me, taking the next step to get an integrity. And again, it's not huge. You know, you've got to create a business that's going to be a $1 billion business, and you've got to start that tomorrow kind of thing. It's do the dishes tonight. You know, when you're about ready to yell at your kids or say something unkind to your spouse, see if you can check that, you know, and get a little bit more integrity in this moment. And those moment-to-moment choices really build the strength so that we can approach the bigger questions with more power and with more of the vitality that comes with, again, arete, virtue, and integrity.
I think the real potential, what really excites me about this vision of conscious business, or, you know, as we've been talking about it here, this paradigm, you know, way of looking, way of thinking about business, is that, you know, potentially it could integrate, you know, both the conscious aspect, you know, which is also about how do I transform myself to be what I can be and to live my fullest potential. That's the conscious part, and then there's the business part, which is also about how do I manifest that in the world, you know, in effectively, like really get it done. And often, you know, if we have a sort of big vision and a grand kind of purpose, then those are things that we can't do alone, or maybe not often, maybe that's always the case. So it means that we need to come together and work with other people to do that, and, well, voila, there's a business there. So I'm wondering, on the one hand, you know, those are often very separate now. Like, for example, you can see it with for-profit and not-for-profit. You know, like the not-for-profits are kind of the idealists who go out and have all the great ideas, but they don't get anything done. You know, that's kind of almost the culture around that, seems to be anyway. That's what you'll hear people in the corporate structure say. But then the other way around, of course, business is said to have kind of no soul and, you know, no kind of, well, no ideals, really. So, you know, I think if we want to marry those two worlds into a vision of conscious business, then, you know, what's going to be the relationship between idealism and realism?
It's the integration. I think that that's exactly it. It's transcending and including, you know, the idea that it's either or, and saying, wow, that's to me what conscious business is all about is, and again, you can still have a nonprofit or a for-profit structure and be running a conscious business, and you can have a nonprofit run an unconscious business, right? Either it being unsustainable or the employees being mistreated or whatever. So it's not that either one is particularly better than the other, but as you said, they tend to have the idealism or the realism, and I think that's the challenge we all face. It's the challenge that I face as an entrepreneur building the business that we're building now, and how do we do it? How do we hold our ideals? You know, I've raised several $1 million and built and sold a couple of businesses, but I did it really on an idealism kind of model of, in the sense of I can create this extraordinary vision, but I didn't match it with sustainable revenues, you know, and I was able to kind of succeed in that in spite of my failure to create a sustainable, profitable structure. And now it's fun for me and challenging for me to look at it and say, okay, what? How do I do that where I have the idealism and create a sustainable structure to do it? And that's an awesome challenge, which I think, again, demands that we're taking care of ourselves and being able to meet that challenge and then exploring different models and learning from all these great teachers that you guys are bringing together and all the great models of entrepreneurial and large corporate success stories and finding our own path that really has deep resonance and that works.
You know, because me and Diederik were talking about it today in the preparation about how we feel a new paradigm of what work is emerging right now. And one of the purposes of this series has also been that, you know, all these beautiful and interesting speakers that we have, that we found that they already have so many insights and so many solutions that we felt that it was important to actually get those together, to be able to share those, you know, look for the red thread, look for what is already out there, and then trying to kind of like, you know, upgrade the whole idea of what work is, you know, like work 2.0 or in a, you know, in a different way. And we were talking about that, and then I was browsing back through your RTA paper, and one of the beautiful things, I think you were quoting the Dhammapada and talking about we are what we think. And that triggered a question in me, is that, you know, how is thinking about what work is and what business is, you know, how will that have an effect on how we will manifest ourselves in this more conscious way?
I think that's again why I admire the work that you're doing, is getting people to actually make this a more consistent part of their dialogue and their actual thought process of what is possible, what do we focus our energy on, and moving away from kind of the complaining and the criticizing of what doesn't work to the creator mentality of, but what do I want to see created? If everything did go perfectly, what would it look like? What would be one of the themes we have in our business is, you know, when people interact with our business, one of the things we want them to say is, that's how I would do it, right? That's how I would do it. And, you know, that's one of our challenges. Okay, so we have different challenges that we face. What's just the ideal way to do it? And just thinking about these questions elicits these conversations and just the overall thoughts and actions that lead to effective change. Again, I'm not sure if I addressed the theme you're looking for, but it's a powerful concept.
Yeah, so it's like the importance of your mind, of how you see your own possibilities in relation to the possibilities of, you know, the place from which you work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like what inspires me in what you're saying is that, you know, like what you were saying about the creator mentality, that it's also a mindset, you know, it's taking responsibility as well in that, you know, starting with yourself. And I think that was, you know, somebody else, Nate, mentioned on the comments as well, that seems to be something that was very very much resonating through some of your work, you know, about the possibilities to take your own responsibility for your life and thereby also how you do work. Could you maybe comment a bit on that?
Yeah, I mean, this brings us full circle to the idea that your consciousness is your greatest asset. And, you know, in my work, I've identified 10 principles that are involved in optimal living that I've seen repeated again and again throughout all these great teachers. And the first principle is optimism, which for me means basically the ability to put your attention where you want, when you want. And that involves being able to see the most empowered solution to any given challenge. And if we can't do that, none of this stuff matters. If we're finding ourselves criticizing and complaining and blaming and being in a victim perspective and orientation all the time, none of this stuff matters. It's pure intellectual kind of nonsense and blah, 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 you know. But if we can shape our consciousness and consistently look for the empowered opportunity to create something, then we have a chance to do something truly extraordinary. So, yeah, being able to shift our mindset and our overall mentality on something, to me, is the first foundational step to this whole process.
You know, could you maybe explain a bit? Because, you know, it's also about, you know, taking responsibility. Sometimes, you know, I felt that it also gives a very heavy charge, you know, then, you know, I want to start practicing or trying meditation, and then at a certain moment noticing, you know, or I wasn't able to do it every day, and then, you know, feeling like, oh, so, I, you know, I don't have the discipline. And so, sometimes it's very hard to, on the one hand, you know, have your ambition to live in a more conscious way, and, you know, and on the, you know, but to still in a positive way look at, when it's not working out or you're facing some difficulties to keep motivated.
Yep.
I think what you're saying is that, you know, you've really built up like a healthy practice around that. Could you maybe say something about the challenges in setting that up and actually keep maintaining that?
Yeah. Well, you're speaking to them, and we all have them. And this is where it truly is, in my perspective, a heroic path, you know, to really make this level of commitment and to truly live with arte, to truly live with integrity and virtue isn't easy, especially in this world. I mean, George Leonard wrote a great little book, highly recommend, called Mastery. And it's all about this conversation of, it's not about dabbling in something for a little while and being inspired and then bailing at the first hardship, you know, or looking for constant climaxes, you know, that our culture kind of puts out there. He says that our culture is in an all-out war against mastery. So it's very challenging to live with these values consistently. And the word responsibility, to me, I love it, breaking it up into two separate words where it's responsibility. So you have the ability to choose your response. And then it's little by little. You mentioned the Buddha and the Dhammapada quote. Well, one of my other favorite Dhammapada quotes is, little by little, one becomes evil. Or little by little, a water pot is filled with water as one becomes evil, right? And little by little, one becomes good as a water pot is filled with water. So it's drop by drop by drop by drop. And it's not about to take that metaphor a step further. I used to think that I could just change everything at once, you know, and kind of almost like taking a fire hydrant to that beautiful little water pot and then spraying it around the room, trying to change everything immediately. Then a week or a month later, I'm kind of back where I was. And then I realized it's not about that. It's about mundane decision after mundane decision. Am I going to step forward into growth or back into safety? Little by little, drop by drop, we're going to become good or not. And honoring that process, that it isn't about quick returns. It isn't about seeing how fast we can do something. It's about taking the time and developing that discipline over the long run. So we can talk about different things that I do specifically to do that, but just contextually, that's been really helpful for me to see that it isn't about getting there quickly. You know, it's about taking the time and really simplifying our lives and then realizing it's going to take diligent, patient, persistent work if we want to achieve anything, business success or meditative success or nutritional changes, et cetera.
You know, Brian, I'm Just making a quick pause, because I want, there's a few more questions that we're really dying to ask. Actually, there's a lot more questions, and I think we'll go into a few more, but I also want to check, like, is there anything, you know, we called you up and we said, you know, you want to talk about conscious business and waking up the workplace, and you said, yeah, awesome, let's do it. So I just want to check, you know, we're asking a lot of questions, but is there anything specifically that you're also, you know, curious about or passionate about that you want to share with us before, you know, I kind of launch into our next question?
No, I'm excited about your next questions, because I really feel that this is, I feel like I'm kind of hammering on the same drum right now of just this idea of the individual showing up most powerfully within the context of conscious business is really, it's really where I'm dedicating my life energy. You know, I'm not spending as much time thinking about systems and overall structures of free markets and stuff like that yet. You know, I've got my reading list and I'm excited to get into that. But right now I'm really focused on more the individual's pursuit and role in that. And obviously I'm quite excited about it. So I want to, I feel good. And I also want to honor the other questions that you wanted to ask to make sure we can get into that. So I'm ready to go there if you want to go.
Well, I mean, that's risky because you have no idea what I'm going to ask you. I was actually just about to kind of flip the tables and play a little devil's advocate because, you know, we're talking about waking up the workplace and, you know, looking at this new paradigm of conscious business, and that's all well and good. You know, there's good reasons for doing that. I think we're all really passionate about it. Yet, you know, there's lots of assumptions there too. So, you know, playing devil's advocate, I'm wondering, like, what might be some reasons, you know, not to wake up the workplace, you know, to keep a lid on it, to just be conscious of that. I'm kind of wondering and curious what you think about that.
And I'm eager to hear your thoughts on that. Yeah, I mean, the thing that comes to my mind is you shape, and one of the reasons why I think we're going to have a really hard time making some huge fundamental shifts is there's so much money in the current structure, you know, from the current health system, and everything is reactive to the way that we consume media and, you know, the subsidies that exist that are keeping certain things cheap, which tend not to be healthy for us. So I definitely think that there's the, first of all, it's not, we're not going to snap our fingers and have instantaneous change. And if we did, the overall economic structures that we have in place now, there'd be a vacuum, let's say. So kind of a high-level thought on it, but I don't have much more beyond that.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking, like, also, you know, we're talking a lot about the kind of the benefits of waking up the workplace and being awake and showing up fully in life and in work. But, I mean, obviously there's cost, too. You know, because otherwise all of us would just be doing it and we wouldn't be talking about it and we wouldn't be talking about conscious business or things like social entrepreneurship because we wouldn't need the adjectives. You know, we would just be talking about business or entrepreneurship without needing to say it's conscious or social, right. As in, you know, not unconscious and not asocial. So what's the cost? You know, because, for example, you were saying, you know, you were interested in some of my thoughts, and I mean, I'm better at coming up with the questions than the answers, maybe, and that's why we're doing this series. But one thought is that, you know, it's really messy to wake up the workplace because you'll have all these people running around, you know, being passionate about things and living their deep values. How the hell are you going to, you know, kind of get your product out the door? You know, like, I'm kind of serious here. I mean, I'm talking a little bit as a joke, but I'm also serious because, you know, if you look at entrepreneurs, they're often really stubborn people with a very clear idea about what they want to do and what they're passionate about. And that's why they, I think, that's part of why they succeed. But also, you know, if you look at some of the bigger challenges that we face and the complexity of business today, you know, having everyone sort of go at it by himself or herself, also I don't think is going to cut it. You know, so if you wake up the workplace and people really start kind of working in alignment with their deep values, like, how do you really kind of come together and collaborate without kind of compromising those values? Like, do you see where I'm going?
I do, and I think that the good news is that if it was actually, if we fully implemented this, I think we'd get out of kind of a narcissistic, entitled, I can do this on my own kind of thing, and we'd realize that we don't do anything ever on our own. You know, from the garbage collector who picked up our garbage in front of our place this morning to the water that comes out of the shower head. I wasn't doing any of that, you know. So we can't do anything in our lives without an infinite number of anonymous people making our lives possible. I think that's the first starting point. I think as we become more conscious, we realize that. And then what comes to mind now is another example from Whole Foods. They have, as their kind of statement of values, it's called their Declaration of Interdependence. So I think one of the key ideas of a conscious business and conscious individuals within conscious businesses is that they realize that nothing is done independent of others. There's an interdependence which is honored, which is what's not honored in the unconscious businesses. Unconscious businesses say, you know what, we're going to create shareholder value, and we're going to pay our executives whatever we want to pay them, and we're going to make as much money as we can, screw everything else. There's no interdependence. So when we actually step back and see that, I think that there's just that calling to, if we're going to be in integrity on these ideas, to really seek the interdependence and to make our work, our practice, our spiritual practice, really, where are we showing up in integrity with that? And then we're going to have entrepreneurs and self-employed individuals are just as interdependent as an individual in a corporation. It's just a different set of webs, right, and different kind of constellation of connections, but it's the same basic idea. So as we talk a lot about the individual actualizing, for me it's a given that as the individual actualizes, they become more loving, more patient, more trusting, more honest, more accountable, more reliable, more responsible, more interdependent, not some, again, entitled narcissist who's just all about it for themselves. The definition of that level of consciousness is you realize it isn't all about yourself, you know, and you're committed to making a contribution, relating, and giving your greatest gifts and greatest service to the world. Mm. Get me excited there.
I'm just being torn between building on that and asking more questions and also looking at the time that I know that there's quite a few people listening in, either by phone or via the web, from all around the world. And I also want to give them a chance to ask some of their questions, because, you know, some of them might be asking really cool questions that we're not even thinking of. So, you know, is there anything that you kind of want to say before we go to the Q&A section, you know, to just wrap up this piece?
Yeah, and I look forward to the great questions.
Cool. Okay, so just to our listeners, We're going to have another 20 to 30 minutes to ask some of your questions, because maybe you were sitting there listening and thinking, why doesn't he ask this one question and does he keep hammering on that? So here's your chance. If you're on the phone, you can dial star 2 to raise your hand, and that means raising your hand in our teleseminar software. So we'll see that you have a question, and we can unmute you and have you ask your question live to Brian. And if you're joining us through the web, then in your lower left, in the lower left corner of your screen, you'll have a chance to submit a question. And quite a few people have been doing that already. So I'll just kick off with the first one while people start doing that. There's Marnie from Carlsbad saying, I just realized I have the sustainable revenue, but not the investors. Can you recommend how to find conscious investors who want good results instead of pure profit? And where would those people be?
Yep. Well, first of all, if you have sustainable revenue, congratulations. And that's the hardest thing to get to and the most attractive aspect of a business that a potential investor is going to look at. So that, for anyone listening to this, starting a business, et cetera, that needs to be the number. From my vantage point, I've raised $8 million in my two different businesses and never had sustainable revenue in those. We're creating that now, which I'm very excited about, with Entheos and Philosopher's Notes. But sustainable revenue is the most important aspect of our business as we're creating products we're proud of and serving the world, and being able to do so sustainably is just huge. So if you can bring that business model, a working business model that's way beyond an idea, way beyond a, hey, check out the product, but with sustainable revenue, that's extraordinary. And then it begs the question, why do you want to raise money? My presumption is that there's a desire to grow and to expand, and I would check in on that and see if you can do it from internal profits first. And then from there, there's a growing network of of individuals who are passionate about investing. I haven't been in that space for years now, so they're not coming to me. But if you even just Google conscious investors, and I cannot remember, there's a couple of different groups you can actually present to specifically geared around this conscious investment. And then do you guys have, I see that you have Rand Stegen on, but there's another guy. Do you guys know Randy Eisenman over at Satori Capital?
I've heard of the name, Satori Capital, but I don't know him. Sounds like that might be an interesting angle. We don't really have the investment angle in our lineup right now.
He's a great guy, and if you wanted to extend your offering, I'd be really happy to make the introduction because he's just a fantastic guy. He's on Rand Stegen's board, and he's not the source for this potential business investment, but basically they're addressing this issue. Where is the sustainable investment capital, Satori Capital? And they're going to be dealing with larger entities looking for, you know, very significant investments and buyouts. But the good news is there are a lot more investors looking for exactly this. I actually can do some research and find out. Maybe what we can do is post it up on the website when I figure out what those sources are. Then we can share it with, I forgot her name. What was the name?
Marnie.
Then we can share it with Marnie from there.
So we'll make sure, Brian, that you know, after the call, that we we'll pick this up and you know, maybe look with you if we can make a comment of this on the website.
Sounds great.
And then in the meantime, I'd like to ask a question from somebody else who posted a question on the blog. So you know, we are reading those questions and we really want to integrate them as well. So feel free to keep doing that. And this is a question from Joanna Rakers, and she is asking. If a person is living his or her truly authentic self, does that mean that they also know what the right thing is to do in any given situation?
Yeah, well, my experience with that is that it's very much a dynamic process. And Dan Millman has a great line on this. He says, there are no enlightened beings. There are simply more or less enlightened moments. You know, we all have good moments. We all have less than good moments. And the challenge is, how do we string together more and more of the positive ones together?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I think I'm constantly questioning my values and seeing how I can live more authentically. And it's not a static state. It's very much a dynamic process of, okay, this happens. How do we respond? This is what we want to do with the business. What's the best way to do it? And it's very much an exploration. Values clarification for me, and from what I've seen and what I've studied, is that it isn't a static state. It's very much we're exploring a new edge, you know, and kind of leaning into that edge while maintaining our center is the trick. And then when we fall off and we go a little too far, approach it like you're surfing. You know, you don't get upset when you fall off. You realize that's part of the deal. Hop back on and go paddle back out to get the next wave. And keep that perspective in mind. And humor and humility go together pretty well as well.
So you would say that, so in a way, what you're saying is that, you know, you might not always know exactly what to do, but, you know, you can practice to be a better surfer and to be able to, you know, ride a lot more, intensity of it. Dietrich, didn't you read this beautiful quote today, which related to tension and stress as well?
Well, I didn't read the quote. It was given to me yesterday by Brian.
Oh, right.
in preparing for the call, because I was saying you know, that we were really excited about the call and also somewhat nervous. And then you reminded me, Brian, of you know, that you can actually kind of have this perspective where you eat stress like a candy bar.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally loved it. And that's been a big help in preparing for today. I mean, I've been having quite a few of those candy bars preparing for the call.
That's awesome, and that's really important, I think, is to embrace the ambiguity, you know, so to embrace the stress of pushing your edge, and then also when you don't have an answer, that's not necessarily a sign that you aren't living an authentic life. It's a sign that you're being challenged to move to the next depth, the next level of authenticity, and then when we approach that with a tolerance for the ambiguity, the suffering decreases and we're in a better place to actually solve it from our highest selves. So again, the humility, the humor, and the sense of playfulness, and realizing that that's just part of the game, is sometimes we're going to make mistakes, sometimes we're going to fall off, and and get back on and celebrate the process.
Exactly. We have quite a few questions coming in through the internet, and there's a lot on the blog as well. For those of you on the phone, just to mention again that if you want to ask your question live to Brian, that's possible, but you just need to raise your hand so that we know which line to unblock. So if you, on your phone, press star 2 or dial star 2, that will make you visible to us so we can just unmute you, because if we would unmute everyone, it would become a bit of a mess. So that's possible. And then in the meantime, another question from the UK this time, from Richard. He writes, for an aspiring entrepreneur, what one book is a must to read to start a business with higher ideals than the majority of businesses out there? And how have you applied them?
Great question. So there's two different ways to approach this. There's the nuts and bolts of a business, very practically, and then there's the kind of more theoretical concepts around conscious business. The book that comes to mind is Rework by the 37 Signals guys, who I think capture just a way to get to work and to approach business that just cuts through a lot of the nonsense that's out there. It's not necessarily, you know, they're very much conscious entrepreneurs from my perspective, but they don't talk about that explicitly. But I think that's a really fun, quick read, Rework, R-E-W-O-R-K, and highly recommend that as a very practical guide to getting things done within the context of creating a business or being self-employed, even working within an organization, et cetera. And then how have I applied it? Some of those ideas, a lot of their ideas are kind of echoing things that I've known. One of the ideas I'll point out right now is there's this myth that you have to be, it's kind of the get big or go home mentality, and I kind of played on that. I definitely played on that with my first business in the late 90s, the first dot-com boom, and we raised $5 million. Our second wave was $4 million, and our investors wouldn't give us the money unless we demonstrated how we would spend it over 6 months, $4 million. And I had spent $10,000 over the first 8 months of the business. We literally had to spend the money as fast as we could so that we can go out and raise the next $20 million and then go public to get them liquid. It is insane. And this idea of we need to get big, we need to raise a lot of money and all those things is really pointing to the extrinsic stuff that I was talking about before, where there's this need to be famous and to be powerful and to make a lot of money. And that's just not healthy for individuals or for businesses. So the idea of slowing down and realizing that it's not about how big you get ever, and it's not about how big you get quickly. It's about creating a business of meaning, you know, and focusing on that is an idea that their founders come back to again and again and again that I really admire, and that's a big part of how we're approaching our business. And it's hard to do. I mean, it's hard to actually apply discipline and patience to a business in a world that's screaming about how fast they do everything.
Yeah.
And really just taking the time to build something that has meaning and looking at it over years and decades rather than weeks and months is very much a challenge that we're in literally day in and day out, and is one of the most powerful reminders that I come back to that they touch on a little bit in that book that I really like.
Hey, and Brian, you were mentioning that there were two sides to look at the question for the best book.
Yep.
And you know, do you also have like the one book you recommend, which is more focusing on the conscious or the individual part? You know, the part you have been hammering on, you know, during the whole call.
Yeah. Well, at the risk of self-promotion, the book that I just published, A Philosopher's Note, where I share 100 of my favorite big ideas, and it's very much on the individual that I really like. And then business-wise, you know, you've got your group has some great books. Tony Schwartz has got a number of great books. Jeff Klein, Working for Good, is a great book. Fred Kaufman's Conscious Business is fantastic. Chip Conway, I'm a big fan of his work and the book Peak. I'm also, if I had to kind of recommend one, probably, again, it wouldn't be necessarily Conscious Business, but I love Good to Great and Built to Last. I mean, those are just solid kind of must-read books in my mind. And then I also really enjoy Good Business by Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi that I mentioned before, which is really the application of these ideas from a scientist, from a psychologist, looking at what the ideal structures would look like. Those are some of my ideas. Do you guys have any that you recommend?
Well, I mean, you mentioned a lot of them that we're going to also be talking to on the call. One other thing that I would like to say about your book, Philosopher's Notes, is that besides being filled with great ideas, it's also a very good size. You can easily take it, and I will say that Jeroen and myself have been using it as a talking piece in this call to just make sure that never we're both talking at the same time. So we've actually been using your book a lot during the call, just passing it back and forth, as a way of seeing who's on the flow in the conversation. But I mean, it's an awesome book. Just a bit of a joke there, but really right love it and definitely recommend it.
Appreciate that.
So in the meantime, maybe let's look at another question from Amsterdam this time, which is close to home for us. It's André who asks, how do we, the intrinsically motivated, convince the extrinsically motivated economy towards rethinking the workplace? And what will convince and put positive flywheel into action?
Yep. And again, I'm repeating myself here, and it's deliberate, but it starts with us. So I firmly believe that to the extent each of us is really showing up most fully in our own creative work, again, whether that's within the corporation or in our own businesses that we've created, as we all do that, everyone on this call and everyone who's going to be participating in this series continue to do that and take inspiration from those who are already doing it, I think it's inevitable. And the fact is, honestly, it's inevitable anyway, because the question is, what's the velocity with which we're going to affect this change? But perhaps overly optimistic, I just look at our world and see two things. One, it's simply unsustainable, the current consumption patterns and productive patterns and all that stuff. And then the fact is that this is where the money is going to be made. The money is going to be made in organic foods, the fastest growing food segment. Walmart is selling organic foods now, in finding renewable energy sources, et cetera. So we have a healthy dynamic of, from a spiral perspective, the orange meme being incentivized to do good. So I feel good about that. But again, bringing it back to the specific question, André, I think that it's all about whatever it is you do, do that most fully, and then take the time to provide the mentorship to other people who are passionate about these ideas, continue to create products that have meaning, and as we continue to live with RSA and integrity, I firmly believe we're going to continue to influence those who might have other values at the moment.
And Brian, I was actually wondering, are there some exciting projects that you are working on right now, or that we can expect from you in the, in the coming period?
Yeah, well, I feel like what I'm doing right now is very much laying a foundation to be able to personally share more and more wisdom and become the type of person I want to be, to provide the type of leadership I want to provide. But as you know, I've been working on the Philosopher's Notes, where I created 100 of the summaries of 100 leading optimal living books, and I'm working on volume 2 right now. So I did 100 in the first volume. I'm doing another 100 right now, 35 and a half into that, and I plan to finish, I'm going to do another 65 of them, knocking on wood right now, over the next 6 months. It's pretty much my focused attention. And then we're also working on products to help people deepen their meditation practice. One of the most frequently asked questions we get is, well, how do I start a meditation practice? And we're working on something called Blissitations that integrates some really cool cutting-edge binaural beats technology with cool soothing sounds and subliminal affirmations that a user can record and send to us, and we create cool tracks for them. We're also doing a lot of guided meditations or guided Blissitations that we're really, really excited about. And my wife is passionate about inspiring women to discover their kind of divine feminine. She's got a program called Rock Your Goddess Life that integrates a lot of the ideas that I've been talking about from the context of a goddess, and we're really excited about that. And just all kinds of other ideas, but one step at a time for us at this point. And then, of course, just published the book as well, which I'm pretty excited about.
I get this feeling that, that you're working through so many books, Could we get a picture of your library at home?
Yeah, it's been pretty much, we've been traveling so much that we literally traveled with 100 books, actually over 100 books. It was pretty funny. But I'm doing my best to move to Kindle, A lot of the books are in storage, and we kind of each time we move, we donate more. So I don't have an actual library right now because we're kind of still mobile. But I promise when we get settled.
Kindle is definitely a smart move when you're in the business of, reading all of the world's wisdom that's on paper.
Sounds very like much, although yeah. I have such an affinity to holding a book still. So I'm still transitioning to getting the same visceral feeling that I get when I actually hold a book and underline it and mark it up. But that's another conversation.
Well, in the meantime, Ewan, who is on the other side of the room, obviously not being part of the conversation because he's taking part of our technology, has finally found a way to ask a question.
Great.
So he submitted the question himself. It is, what has been the biggest personal struggle that you had to come through to get to the place you're now at?
Great question. I would say, for me, it would be dealing with kind of volatile emotions. Come from a family with a history of alcoholism in it and just a lot of kind of psychological challenges. And I went through, a lot of my own challenges, not with alcohol, but just with kind of a lot of steep ups and steep downs. And particularly after I dropped out of law school, and it was the hardest time of my life, 22, 23 years old. And, just I couldn't work within the construct of what society told me was valuable, and had been going to a top 10 law school, and I was going to get the stamp saying I was a smart guy in a five-year relationship with a woman who was at med school and had been the president of her sorority and kind of the perfect little couple, but it wasn't it, and it didn't feel good, and I couldn't continue to do that. I wound up dropping out of law school and ending the relationship in the same 24-hour period of time, and I was spinning afterwards. I felt like I had no base and no ground, and at the time I had none of this language, I had none of these tools, didn't even think about my diet or exercise or any of that stuff, and I suffered a lot. And for me, what's been my biggest challenge, and I think in a lot of ways part of my offering is going from that place to realizing that, wow, if you do these things, it's really hard to feel that bad, and if we can, and if I, and as I learned to integrate, for me at first, the first few things were just getting my mind right more consistently and challenging negative thoughts and practicing optimism, eating better, and really investing a lot of energy in that, exercising consistently and investing in that, then meditation has come in over the last few years. But this has started over the last literally 13 years and has been very much a process of almost like I say building scaffolding, where I used to be able to get really excited and motivated and passionate about things and then drop down far, and feel just this terrible angst and depression and stress and all these not-so-fun things. And for me, these habits that I talk about all the time, why I talk about them so much is I've seen how it's been a process for me to build scaffolding, where it's literally impossible for me to fall as far as I used to fall. Of course, I still have on days and off days, but there's this level of security that I have, knowing that it's really hard to have really bad days when I start every morning meditating, when I'm exercising consistently and I'm eating a certain way. And that's been both the biggest challenge and the biggest kind of growth that I've had, I would say. So.
Well, thanks for sharing. Ewan says thank you. Beautiful.
Right on. And I've also found that sharing that and sharing my challenges, which I've gone into in more depth in, I taught a class called Optimal Living 101, has been one of the most positive received things that I've done, because people have an image of me or of other people who might be in different positions and think that we're just perfect and we've always been perfect. And for me, I used to think that I had to be perfect and that the fact that I was suffering was a sign that I must be really screwed up. So it's become clear how important it is for me to honor and share my own imperfections, my own growth process, which is continuous. And it's just been one of the most rewarding things that I've done, to share that stuff so people who may be going through challenging times can realize, wow, okay, cool, I'm not alone, and I can do something about it. So I appreciate the question and the opportunity to share it.
Mm. Yeah, and we appreciate having you on the call sharing that wisdom, Brian. Just looking at the time, I think there's room for maybe, definitely one more question. From the USA this time, closer to home, Lindsay Rees, who says, Brian spoke about following your highest virtue, and I'm wondering if he could briefly share how his consciousness informs him about times when he's found himself walking away from his highest virtue.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So there's two parts there. One is identifying, I'll try to answer this quickly, one is identifying what your highest virtues are, and only with that awareness can you actually know when you're walking away from it, right? So there's some great teachers that talk about that. If you don't even know what you stand for, you don't even know what your values are, you can't even be out of integrity. You're not even at the point where you're capable of being out of integrity because you don't even know what your values are. So for me, my highest values and one of the greatest resources I've had to discover them is Martin Seligman's work, who wrote a book called Authentic Happiness, and you can check out authentichappiness.org, where he talks about what he calls character strengths. And basically, he looked at all the wisdom literature and said, wow, all the great traditions tell us to live with virtue, essentially. That's what they tell us, to live with kindness and generosity and wisdom and courage and hope and optimism and gratitude and all these virtues. And then what he identified was, is there a way that we can translate these virtues into action? And he called that the VIA, Virtues in Action Character Strength Test, to identify what your top strengths are such that you can put them into action in your day-to-day life. And if you do that, you are scientifically in a position to be more consistently happy. And if you do it for something bigger than yourself, you use your strengths often for something bigger than yourself, you are living a life of meaning. Not only do you have happiness, but you have meaning. So identifying our strengths and our virtues in action is key. I've identified mine. They're creativity, hope and optimism, energy and enthusiasm, wisdom, courage, and kindness and generosity. Now, when I live those virtues consistently, I'm much more happy. So what I do nearly every morning is journal those virtues such that I can more consistently live them. And when I don't consistently honor those is when I suffer. I mean, it's really that simple. And it's amazing to see that there's that gap that we talk about, the integrity gap. And for me to be able to identify and say, well, okay, if these are my virtues, how am I not living in integrity with them? If I'm getting, you know, stressed out about the business or whatever, how can I live with more courage? How can I embody that virtue more? If I'm not producing consistently, if I don't consistently produce good stuff, I suffer. Creativity is a huge part of my life, and that's a virtue that I need to express. And by identifying these virtues and when I'm off, it gives me kind of like a compass so I know how to get back on. By putting these virtues into action more consistently, my energy and enthusiasm, my training hard enough, my eating well, I can go on and on throughout the list. But hopefully that addressed some of your question, Lindsay.
I thought that was an awesome question and an even more awesome answer. So there's, if I understand correctly, there's on the authentichappiness.org website, you can actually do this test, right?
Yeah, and I'll actually send you, if you'd like to share with your community, I'd love to give you the philosopher's note on it, where I talk about it and I talk about how you can
actually... That would be
absolutely great, Brian. Yeah, right on. Well, I'll send that to you when we get off the phone.
Cool.
You're welcome to share that with everyone.
Cool, thank you.
Of course.
I think we are at the end of our 90-minute window. So I really, before actually thinking, I suggest we just quickly kind of ask ourselves, you know, the three of us that are at least on the call, I want to ask Jeroen, for starters, like what did you, Jeroen, appreciate most about this call as a way of wrapping up?
I appreciate it a lot. I'm really, you know, the sense of, you know, love and dedication that I feel, you know, in your words, Ryan, really touches me. And one of the things that I'm really taking away from the call is that, you know, my consciousness is my biggest asset. And I've always looked at, you know, how I could I develop my consciousness to build a better business, but I've never really, you know, made it you know, that explicit for myself. So that's one of the core things that I'm taking away with it. And I had a wonderful call. Thank you.
Right on. Thank you.
Cool. I mean, what I really appreciated about this call today, I mean, definitely that insight that you shared in the beginning about consciousness being our greatest asset, that's a pretty big one. Like, I really love that one. So thank you for that. That alone makes it worth my while, for sure. Then the other thing I think, you know, if I would, just from this call, have to give kind of the key element of what a conscious business is, I guess I would summarize it as... you know, the pursuit of a noble purpose while being in integrity with our deep values. And I really appreciate that. I think that goes a long way towards defining what waking up the workplace is all about. And of course, I can't wait to find out how some of our other speakers look at that. But, you know, for this conversation, that was really powerful. So thank you so much. And I want to ask you too, Brian, like, what did you appreciate about the call?
I appreciate you guys and just your passion and how much effort you've put into creating this and giving me an opportunity to share some of my ideas, and just really inspires me. I mean, your authenticity, how genuine you guys are and how, you know, humble yet passionate you are inspires me. It makes me want to be a better person, and that's probably the greatest gift you can give, so thank you.
Thanks. Well, thank you, Brian. And I know, as a wrap-up, next week, same time, we'll be talking to Tony Schwartz, you know, a New York Times best-selling author, talking about energy and conscious business and waking up the workplace and all of that good stuff. So that'll be a lot of fun. In the meantime, you know, if you're listening and you have more questions or we didn't get round to yours, you know, you can always share it on the blog where there's a lively conversation going on. And also, if you have questions for Tony, then we'll put up a blog around you know, his work, and you can share some of your questions there as well. So we hope I was going to say speak to you, although that didn't happen today. Hope to have you there next week, same time. And for now, thank you so much. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Jeroen, Ewan. And goodbye.
Thank you.
Thanks.